What is up? This is the Coastal Noise Podcast, episode number 45. So nice it had to happen twice. Johnny Cole and Eddie Dixon returning to the table. Johnny Cole of Southland Music Line. And Eddie Dixon, musician, artist, and friend. And also joining us, new face to the mix, is Diggs Darcy, also a great musician who co-hosts the Monday night open mic down at Ben Kaufman's Irish Coast Pub. And today we kind of talk a little bit more about music, you know. Like we said in the last episode, it was our longest episode. We talked 2.5 hours, pretty heavy on the music side. And then afterwards, after we wrapped up, we went out and ate and ended up just talking for like another hour, hour and a half. So we thought it was appropriate to just kind of do this again in a similar format, and but this time we do branch off into some other material, movies. We talk a little bit about New Orleans, the music scene there, and what have you, and just all different kinds of stuff. So if you want to hear more episodes, you can go to the coastalnoise.com website, go to the podcast page. You can download the audio for your smartphone, your MP3, what have you. You can stream it there. There's a link to the YouTube account and what have you. I did recently post a new track from me and Eddie's side project. It is a live recording from the Irish Coast Pub. And what else? And of course, all of my guests today, I will have links in the show notes to their websites or their Facebook accounts, what have you. So go check them out. And of course, if you want to really do us a big solid, you can go to the Coastal Noise Facebook page. There's little links throughout the website that you can give us a like, follow on YouTube or follow on Twitter, all those kinds of things. This is a completely free show. Do it for nothing and just producing it and throwing it out to you guys. So just a little bit of feedback is all we ask, and it really, you know, helps out in huge ways, more than you know. So that being said, thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy this show. This is Coastal Noise Podcast, episode number 45. Enjoy.
It's Kaufman's the Coastal Coast Noise Podcast.
That was maybe an inspiration of.
Okay.
y'all ready to kick it off? Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's just do it. Let's get right into it. It sounds like everyone's had a pretty crazy week. So there is no real way to begin when you're in this state of mind, personally. Last night, I went, thought I was going to stay in, then ended up going downtown Ocean Springs. And I was going to stay because I was so beat tired. Then my friend showed up and they were like, come on, let's go. So I was like, all right, well, I'm going to drive my car just in case I decide to come back. While I'm on the way over there, I start nodding off. I was like, this is terrible. I should have stayed home. And I was like, no, I'm going to go. I'm going to make it out. And so I got there. I just parked the first place I found and then I just fell asleep in my car.
Never made it inside.
Well,
women like to party hard.
Also, I lost my phone. My phone was I left it. I went to my parents' place, had a dinner, whatever, and just left it at their house. So I was phoneless all night. It was just coordinating through Facebook, basically. Yeah. So I woke up in my car. I didn't turn my car to see what time it was. Mm-hmm. All my friends are doing this thing called either beer golf or bar golf. This game. Where they picked a bunch of bars in the downtown Ocean Springs area, 9 of them. You spend 20 minutes at each place, and you set a challenge for whatever kind of like an eagle, par, bogey, all that kind of stuff. And they went to Murky Waters barbecue place, right? And the challenge was take a shot of whiskey and then a shot of barbecue sauce. That was like the top, you know, wanted the most points, you know. So
last bar is just to vomit into your own hands.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So basically, the winner's going to need a babysitter. Is what I got from it. So They were in a separate car. They all drove. And then I was by myself without a phone. And I fell asleep in my car as soon as I got there. So I woke up. Didn't know what time it was. I was like laying there with a beanie and a hoodie over me. And just like this. And like fights are going on around outside the car. And you know, hood music.
Check
and
your belly for like your kidney scar from somebody.
Mm-hmm. And so I woke up and I was like, they didn't tell me which bars they were going to go to. You know, I was just like in the area. So I just started walking around, just hanging out at different places, getting drink here or there. And then I happened to find, I went to Boots and Spurs, which I'd never been in before. It used to be the Purple Pelican, you know, the place.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I love that bar.
It's a nice building. It's a great building. Yeah. I've only been there and there when it was the Purple Pelican, and yeah.
I never went when it was a Purple Pelican, but in this Boots and Spur place, I found a bunch of friends that I knew and hung out with them, and then eventually found my other friends. But Boots and Spurs is a pretty cool place. I mean, they've got pretty much everything you could want. It's got a big circular bar, huge venue, live music stage with like a little area where you can like square dance or like listen to the music, whatever. They had a flip cup table. They had bago going. They have pool tables, multiple pool tables. They had a beer pong thing outside. There's the front entrance patio, and then there's a side patio where there's like half a dozen rocking chairs, wooden rocking chairs, where you can sit outside, and it's like you can get away from the noise, but it's all glass windows, so you can still people watch. It was just a fantastic place.
Did they still have the cutaway booths on the side of the stage? There was like, where they cut into the wall and you could like sit right there by the stage and
have a booth and table.
In Chicago at the Green Mill, you know, they have booths going down either side, and that's if you can get in there late at night and just sit in one of those booths and disappear.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's my style right there.
Yeah. So then I just happened to find my group of friends who started the game, and I was like, hey, you know, still don't have my phone. Kind of gave him the update or whatever.
Were you wandering around town with like a phone booth, a phone book in a chair? And this is my reference to the jerk.
Just looking for a telephone booth, and then realizing
you went back and slept in your car again.
No, once I started drinking, it was okay.
It's, you know, you really get, you have a problem. You start waking up in your car all the time. Like
I went to New Orleans to meet a girl I was going out with at the time to meet her mother and her friends and go hang out with them for a night, and I asked permission to actually try to woo the mother of my girlfriend, somebody I was dating. And so I went out there, and they had already been drinking for a little while, so I got there with them and started trying to catch up. And right at the point when I got just good and lit, and I was like, okay, now start swinging, you know, swinging towards somebody. And they're like, all right, well, we're heading back to the hotel. And I'm in New Orleans. I drove down there. So I fell asleep in my car on top of I had put my gum on top of a Red Bull can. And so I fell asleep sideways on top of the Red Bull can. So when I woke up in the morning, not only was I like, where the hell am I? But I felt a different weight on my head. And I was moving around trying to find it. And it was this Red Bull can sticking out of me. So somebody... There were people around, so somebody walking by that car saw somebody all of a sudden sit up with a Red Bull can stuck to their head, just like not quite knowing where they were. So they can just send the royalties for that entertainment.
Yeah, that's did you see the guy with the Red Bull can stuck to his head? He was quite lost.
Do y'all know of McGill's? Is it McGill's or Gill's? Place right across the bridge from the Julep Room.
Oh, Gill's Fish Camp.
Yeah, I saw something there once. I didn't know that was like a place where people go to like drink and hang out and all this stuff. I thought it was a tackle and bait place.
Oh no! It is pretty much a go get drunk and throw up in the back kind of.
That's like we're doing a promo for a piece for Gill's Fish Camp.
I just love that enormous fireworks building next to it. I've taken all sorts of pictures of that.
No, that was the place where everyone went at the end of the night, and there was some craziness going down. Yeah. So, but it was kind of a cool place too. I mean, they had their indoor deal, and then their back outdoor deal, and then it scoops down.
Yeah.
You can walk right out the back.
So. I've been there during the summer, like, and it's Gill's is one of those good places where when you go out and play somewhere, and at the end of the night it's 2-3 in the morning, and you're not sure where to go. That's one of the last stops that you can go to, and I've been there at like 2-3 in the morning, and the back porch is full, the inside's full, there's people hanging out in the front, it's hard to get a drink, you know, it's just people gravitate to that place, and there's never a band, it's always just a jukebox, and it's playing some god-awful song that none of us would ever care to hear, but people love the place. I mean, they just pack it out every weekend.
The place that used to be the Purple Parrot, did they have anything playing the night you were there? Or they
would, yes, yeah, they it was were, a it was a two-piece thing. I think they were using some like computer generated drum tracks or something. I don't know. I really didn't see. I know there was a guitarist.
I'm taking it's country, right? But it's what kind of music they play at this place?
You know, classic rock.
Also, it's a variety
little bit,
of stuff.
Yeah, variety of stuff.
Cool.
There was some square dancing going on at one point. Some, you know, brown eyed girl slow dancing and, you know, the jitterbug.
So it was a variety.
I think it might be line dancing.
Line dancing?
Well, line dancing, yeah.
I don't know that anybody square dances anymore. That's the...
Couldn't tell you the difference.
Two lines of people coming at each other from across the room and doing the thing. And
do-si-do.
Do-si-do and all that. I think it's more line dancing.
Yeah.
It's like shuffles. What everybody does now, the Harlem Shake and stuff. Yeah. To the left, to the left, to the right.
Harlem Shake.
Whistle while you twerk.
Exactly. And it's funny how that's just like a thing. What's funny is go play a gig, and with what I play is very stripped down, especially if I do a solo and it's all folky and Americana or whatever, slight rock, and I take breaks, and yeah, songs like that will come. I don't even, the Harlem Shake is the only one that I know the name of. I think that's what it's called. But they have all those songs where everybody comes up, all the girls line up, and they start doing their dance, and I'm like, I just played All Along the Watchtower in Dylan style, and now we're getting turned up.
Yeah, and then you go back and you have to play. Okay, let me the Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. Hold on 1 second. Everybody ready? Get set for your dance.
Right.
Yeah, when I've done some solo gigs in the past, like if it's not going well, like, and I know I have Wagon Wheel in my basket, or Hey, What's Going On, or something like that.
Yeah.
I'll usually just whip it out and be like, hey, here's one song you will never see me play, and then I'll start playing that. I'll play the whole song all the way through. It makes me feel a little bit
it's
better.
It's a good way to couch it. Like, here's something I just absolutely, you're not going to see this. And then
there
1, 2, 3, 4.
You know the part in the Blues Brothers movie when they go into the, you've all
with
seen
the fences.
You know, they do the thing from Rawhide, and then all these rednecks are in there throwing bottles at the cages.
Yeah, that's good stuff. I've always been afraid of that because of that movie. Yeah, you know, I've played some places where it feels like things may get thrown soon.
It comes with the territory, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, Johnny, you're going to South by Southwest pretty soon, yeah?
Yeah, it's this coming week. We do every Southland Music Line every year. We try to make a trip out there. We've done it last year and year before. It's you never know what you're going to find out there. It's always a great experience. Last year, they had the some great outdoor events too. We had the tribute to Jimi Hendrix. And they released the stamp, and all that happened then, and it was a great thing on the Memphis Soul Sound. There was a lot of great artists. So you never know what's going to happen. This year, they got some good outdoor stuff coming up. I know there's the band Spoon, and a few bands are going to be having some stuff there.
There should be a few people at the Spoon Show.
Yeah, I would have to think that. But the real thing is all these venues, there's just so many out there that you just, it's got more venues anywhere in the country. And I've been around, so yeah, it does. And you will walk up and you might be a band that you've never heard of, maybe a few others have. And it was one that we saw last year was Lincoln Durham. He is, Ray Riley Hubbard, I think, produced his first couple albums, but this guy is a one-man show. We eventually saw him again in New Orleans. We kept waiting for him to show up somewhere in this area, and we did this January, and me and Andy, Steven Anderson, Robbie Amonette were down there, and it was just blow away. So you never know what we're going to run across.
One-man band, you mean he's like playing a kick drum?
He plays everything, and it's really, I wrote an article about it one of the most recent articles in the Southland on the website. And it's like a throwback to something out of the, it reminds me of, we talked about movies before, how music and movies relate together. This guy makes me think of something like No Country for Old Man, or
Harry Smith anthology.
You know, and what's the movie with the Daniel Day-Lewis came out with the old man?
There Will Be
Blood. Yeah, There Will Be Blood. That's what it makes me think of. And even his attire, he started off the show hitting a briefcase, I mean, his suitcase. Yeah. And is anything for sound, but it's done in a way that's not gimmicky. Yeah. It is so stylistically, he is a great songwriter. He's somebody I just cannot see.
Are we pretty sure that was a song and that he wasn't just angry at somebody? Well, yeah. Just beating the crap out of
the guy before, I think we talked about this too the last time we were on the show, but the guy before that, it was crazy, wild stuff you want to bring your mother to. But this was not, he was definitely a great artist to see. But that's the kind of stuff you find at Southwest. So we're looking forward to that. But it's been so busy. You talked about doing another podcast today, and it's been two. This past week has been so busy for us. We started off there's been a lot of stuff going over in the Alabama, Mobile area. We last week we did the we had some shows at the Callahan's. Have you guys ever played Callahan's? You ever in it's a very good venue over. It's in the Oakley district of Mobile. A guy named John Thompson runs the place. We saw a band called Great Pickett. We talked about it. Dylan LeBlanc, we saw him last week. Went to the Frog Pond in Blue Moon Forum. Something that you got, just Google it, look it up. I can't explain. It's just a great experience. Kind of the vein of Midnight Rambles with Levon Helm.
Oh, yeah. I just watched that last night.
Guys that you really, people like, has played with Neil Young and Steve Winwood and all these type people. They're there and they jam together. It's a super place. Google it. It's worth I can't give it justice just talking about it real quick. First of the week, we went and saw Elvis Costello in Memphis with Larkin Poe. Love Larkin Poe. We talked about them briefly too the last time. They've toured with Elvis Costello in Europe quite a bit. I've seen them here a number of times and up the East Coast, different places too. And we, when I heard, got word, when I talked to them in New Orleans recently, they said, I asked him, well, I heard that Elvis Costello is doing his solo tour coming up. You girls going to be in the... They just kind of smiled, so I figured, oh, well,
Is he pimping a record, or he just like...
No, he's just, hits? It's just... Right, he's just solo thing, everything. Out. And so I looked on the schedule. There's Mobile, Alabama. I said, hey, right next door. Then a little thing came up. Three shows that Larkin Poe would not be in was New Orleans, Mobile, and Jacksonville. So I said, well, that's not going to work. So Memphis was the best, next best thing, and it was great seeing Elvis Costello in the other Elvis's town,
right?
And so it was a great show there. He does like 30 some songs. It was super. Thursday night we had John Mellencamp in, doing his solo thing in Birmingham. We went, saw that great show. He did New Orleans Tuesday night, so we missed that. Actually, one
that folds in. Have you ever seen John Mellencamp's paintings?
Yeah, I have seen some of that. That's really, you're talking about art and music.
Yeah, strange, like big blockheaded people. Yeah, it's super colorful and
creative people, you know. Yeah. And then, of course, Friday night, we saw Elvis Costello in Mobile, and it was kind of funny, the part that where the girls usually come on stage to perform with him. He says, and now to welcome my special guest, me. So they weren't there. But he did the Bob Dylan song about, you know, Mobile and Memphis on My Mind, Memphis Blues, long version of that. And he finished it off with I Want You from the Blood and Chocolate album from 86. I'm a big Costello fan. But so it's been busy. Last night was the Banditos again. It's a band, we're talking about Southwest. Banditos been forming. Have you ever heard the Banditos?
Just the biker gang.
The biker gang. Okay, everybody talks about that. They don't use the. It's just the Banditos for one reasons.
Oh, excuse me, motorcycle club.
Right. But these guys are the working, probably the busiest band in this country. I mean, I always joked to these guys and said, Robbie Amonette went on tour with them last year, and he, you know, that would have been an experience in itself. But, and they wound up in Southwest there. But they're one of the 10 bands that was labeled as one of the 10 bands to watch this year at South by Southwest. They just recently signed with Bloodshot Records, and they're well deserving of their success. Like I said, I always tell them, I said, when man gets to Mars, the Banditos are going to be sitting there waiting on them playing a gig. So you finally get here. Yeah. But they're great guys, and the lead vocalist, they're a girl, the name of Mary Richardson. Janis Joplin would just be like smiling big now. I mean, she's just, it's that good. And so, yeah, we got a lot going on.
Cool.
Sounds like it.
You said Elvis played solo, or he had a band with him?
No, it's just solo, by himself. It is. This is, and he did, I believe, the Memphis show was 37 songs.
Oh, wow. He was on a late night show. Oh, man, I want to say it was about a month ago, and it was a Monday night. We were at the bar at Irish Coast, and we shut everything down, stopped, turned the TV on, ran it through the PA, and Elvis has always been a big fan of somebody that I enjoy listening to is Ray LaMontagne.
Oh, yeah.
And when he had his show, he brought Ray on, and they did their jam and stuff, and watching him on the late night show, and I noticed Elvis had taken half of Ray LaMontagne's band. Yeah. I was like, oh, okay, that guy.
Elvis Costello is so good about, he's just teamed up with so many people and embraced, I mean, Burt Bacharach, some of the stuff he did with Burt Bacharach is great. And then and he's performed, went on tour with him and stuff,
It's pretty Bacharach underrated. Bacharach is one too. Of the things.
He is very underrated.
Like that. The Bacharach stuff made a sort of a comeback in songwriting circles. People were talking about it in the sort of smoother 70s, 60s thing. And that's one thing I still can't get. Like, I can completely, I'm down with, you know, Cole Porter, like all that, like the history of songwriting for the most part, but the major seventh Bacharach 70s smooth thing will just never be a thing for me. I can't do it. Those tonalities are just foreign to my makeup.
So you're talking about more of the early 70s stuff like Bacharach, Bear Sayer stuff
and
like that.
And I mentioned this, you know, it's all these you know, major seventh, smoothly orchestrated, a lot of French horns.
Well, you know, it goes back to the Brill Building in New York with all the stuff that came out of there, and because it kind of inspired, it kind of continued on into the 70s.
I'm down with them.
You like that stuff? Yeah. Okay, so all right. So
Carole King and like I saw something with Carole King doing "Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow," and like the way her voice is now, like a little bit broke from where it was before, is just gorgeous. Like listening to her do that stuff. That's like Nick Lowe. I saw Nick Lowe play some stuff.
He's produced all that early stuff with Elvis Costello. I've seen him a number
and
of times.
And his voice, you just don't, like, there's nothing missing. It was like, there's nothing wrong with it. It's perfect. Like, now
he's one of those guys, you talk about underrated, you know, Nick Lowe. I've always, you know, everybody does all of those Cruel to Be Kind, you know, that 79 song, and it was like top 20 or something, but that's what they know. But he has done so much great work, and including work with Elvis Costello. And he's that whole vein there, part of, I guess, through about 1978, 79, when Elvis Costello kind of broke into the thing. There was, you know, Graham Parker and Joe Jackson. God, I love Joe Jackson. Speaking, and we talked about Tom Waits when we get on Wealth. Dylan here, you are, what you do with that Tom Waits Downtown Train is just... I mean,
I don't think I've heard that. You do that solo, right? Not with the band?
Not with the Monday night band. That's if I do it by myself, it works. But if I do it with a band and it doesn't have that one lead guitar lick in it, the signature sound of that song, then it doesn't sound right.
I called you Dylan, but you know, it's Dylan. I did see a guy named Dylan LeBlanc was recently.
There we go. No, that's fine.
The Graham Parker, somebody that I always heard the name. I love the idea of the guy because I've heard that he was angry, and I'm very much into anger.
Yes.
But I don't know anything by him. Honestly, I haven't heard a damn thing. So
it's,
you might have to.
It's good. It's good to go back and you know, look at some of the stuff these artists like that. I always said those three guys, like the Trinity of kind of a certain style of thing, Joe Jackson included, and then of course they branched into so much other stuff, particularly Joe Jackson and Elvis Costello. But Joe Jackson and stuff with the big band, Julia, all that stuff, it was really cool. But yet it was that angry, you know, young man punk thing. It kind of got, you know, came out of the, you know, UK there thing, and I still think it's some of the best stuff, and it's very underrated. And only one of that three is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is Elvis Costello. I guess Joe Jackson maybe one day will be, I hope. But
I love combo organs, these old, like either the Voxes or the Farfisas.
Oh, yeah.
And that's all over that Costello stuff. I'll listen near about any of that stuff.
We talked with Diggs with the Tom Waits thing. You got an amazing voice when it comes to, I think, me and Ben said something about it too, didn't he? You sound very similar to in your some of your songs with to Elvis Costello. I think you could really do a real cool cover of, you know, Allison or something like that.
I'm not half as familiar with him. I stopped doing what I used to do, which was holler a lot more and do a bunch of Tom Waits. Like, to the point of, like...
That's why Eddie and I get along so well. But do you, like, instant.
Well, Diggs, do you think that you... Can you see a little Elvis Costello in his voice?
Absolutely, I
really saw it the other night at the open mic night.
For me, and this segues into something that I did want to talk about and we wrote down, but for me, that makes me incredibly happy because that means I've lost the monkey on my back, which was, for a long time, all I did is I'd play the songs... just on the edge of where I could sing them.
Right, yeah.
In as far as the range. And then just holler all night until, like, you go home and you're croaking. Mm-hmm. And thought that was the thing. I was so into... I found a cassette of Rain Dogs in my band's practice space. And I was like, mid-20s, perfect time to find this, you know? And, like, I found that and listened, had no idea. And I'd heard about Tom Waits. I heard he was a piano player. So I was thinking, like, some sort of soul thing, or is it like a New Orleans-y deal?
And then you pick up on Rain Dogs first.
Yeah, and it's like Singapore opens it. I'm like, what the hell? And this is always a mark of something I know I'm going to love, is when I don't know what the hell is going on and can't stop listening. Like, I don't know that I'm enjoying it. Like, what's happening? And then just keep listening. And then eventually when it sets in, like, that album just ruined me. And I've mentioned it to Diggs before. Mm-hmm. I've been playing since I was 15, but as far as writing songs in earnest, my 20s was the only time I actually started doing it, because I hadn't lived much as a teenager. You know, mm-hmm. I didn't have some childhood that would lend itself to writing anything. I wanted to write about rainy days and ukuleles. But when I found that, I was still just getting my own feet under me, and it screwed me up for a good solid 4 or 5 years where I could not write anything. And then even after I moved to Chicago, mm-hmm. and one of my first bands was very much trying to do take the higher end of what Tom Waits does, the stompy sort of dancey business,
right.
and turn that into a dance band and tried to do that. And I was still hollering and doing all that stuff. And part of my attachment to that whole thing meant that I was throwing away all these other songs. I could start to get an idea for a song and then just chuck it because it didn't fit that mold, and it just had me paralyzed. And so the idea that come around to where someone else, and it's not the first time I've heard that, and the idea that that comes out rather than the other thing, to me is like, I might have finally shaken him off my back. Like, if I met him, I'd completely tongue kiss him for a minute, and then...
Then go total Charlie Benton on him.
I'd actually want to hurt him maybe for just a second, just for that, because he was so good. He made like anything I did pale in comparison. And once I saw the there's a video he has of his live performance called Big Time.
Yeah, right. That's my first experience.
Good Jesus. Experience. How do you do anything but that? Like, that was, admittedly, yeah, there was staging and things, but just the rawness of it and everything else screwed me way up.
Once you catch on to people like that, you know, people who really do appreciate music like you guys, it's changing. Something very special. Some get it. Some will hear it and they're like, I'm not going to try to sing like Tom Waits here. But some people are like, oh, no, God's will. Oh, that's true. What is that?
Yeah.
But then, like you said, you saw it and just like,
everything. You know, it really takes your world and flips it upside down. And then once you go down, I really was hoping that we didn't get into a big Tom Waits conversation. But once you go down the rabbit hole that is Tom Waits, and, you know, no matter where you start at in his career, if you start with the records that he has out now, which is a lot more commercially appealing at this point, but, I mean, he's getting older, so it's time to calm down. And then you go backwards, when you get to Bone Machine, you will sit there and listen to that record for the first time and go, what in the hell? What was he thinking? And his backing band on that album is pretty much, as I know, was Primus.
Mm-hmm.
It was the same.
Well, he was in the yes. Les was involved a lot, but Joe Gore was the guitar
player. Larry Lurie was not there. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Joe Gore was a guitar player, and who's an amazing like San Francisco like jazz guy. He plays with and this is an awesome like completely different vein, but there's a group called the Orange Sinfonette, and it's Ralph Carney that played sax for him, mm-hmm. who's a monster on his own right. Like his, I've got solo albums by him that are well nigh unlistenable. His playing, him as a player, he's one of the most humorous and amazing instrumentalists I've ever met. Like he puts more humor into his instrument than it's just audible. Like that he is a smart ass.
Yeah.
And it's him, Joe Gore, and a cello player and a drummer from San Francisco. Scott Amendola, I think. He plays with Charlie Hunter a lot. Mm-hmm. But and they do all Mancini covers. It's the Orange Sinfonette, and it's amazing because they do these really flipped around.
Where'd you run across them at?
I just heard, I knew Joe Gore because Joe Gore also later played with PJ Harvey on an album that I love called To Bring You My Love, which is just out of this world.
Amazing.
But so I always follow players, and usually if they're that kind of character player where they've got a way of putting a stamp on something, if they choose somebody else, like those guys rarely just hire themselves out to shit. Like usually you can follow them around and you can run across some stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Yeah. Something that always falls in line with whatever else that you were listening to that turns you on about them. And yeah,
or at least there's at the very least there's a tangent that sort of connects the whole thing.
It seems like it's always been this way, at least the way I see it. When you start hearing it on the radio constantly and stuff, it needs time to turn it and find something else. But things you don't hear, you know, like Lou Reed. I mean,
right?
You know, Everybody Walk on the Wild Side. Okay, that's cool. That's
there's
everybody
so
knows that song.
Much more.
But there's so much more. And I always liked, and I talked about this last time we were in conversation about New York. I love living up there, and it was a great place. But you go back to New York now, and the element that seems like some of those songwriters and people like Lou Reed and people like Laurie Anderson, different ones, they just don't, it's left. It's just not there. It's become Disney. You go to Times Square and you see all these, you know, Disney stuff. And I said, well, it's cleaned up. Well, I know, but it's taken some element out of it.
It's gone, yeah.
And that element is what fed some of these people's, you know, creative works. You go to the Brooklyn Heights area and Bob Dylan wrote some stuff there from, was it Tangled Up in Blue? And it talks about the, oh my God, it's but now it's all those little mom and pop stores he sings about in that song, they're not there.
Yeah.
It's maybe well, one, two.
Okay. Next trip you take to New York, you hire a mugger and just you can bring him with you. And then wherever you go, like Brooklyn Heights, I got mugged. And then
I was actually mugged in Brooklyn Heights. And I actually was mugged there, so we get on this subject. But my friends there all joked at me, said, well, some kids can little tricycles come out there, and you know, and I like and mugged me with that. I said, oh, no, man. But it was I kept joking about it when I lived there, and I said, oh, I'm going to get mugged. And I finally got mugged. I guess I cried wolf too many times.
After you.
And I was there, and the cops came, and they were getting, and my friend that was, when looked at me, he said, oh, he's telling the cops? He's probably just like making this up. I'm like, are you kidding? I've got the police here. I've got, you know. So maybe that tells you a little bit about my character, especially back then. But I was mugged there. So, but I mean, I'll bring my own personal muggers.
Yeah, sorry.
You were walking around Ocean Springs the last night and sleeping in your car. You know any muggers? Maybe some people might be interested in that job.
Yeah, the next time you're wandering the streets after sleeping in your car,
start
passing out some cards. Like the
thing about my situation last night was people saw me sleeping with a hood over my head, and they probably thought that I was the mugger and that they should just
well then
the other
maybe
way.
You know it's maybe a little part time work.
Yeah, it pays
a lot
regularly,
more than playing music.
You know, depending on the person, you know.
I know some folks that are still living in New Orleans, and there seems to be, like, I don't live there, so I don't know. But it seems to me that what used to be show up and rob somebody and take the fuck off, run, has now, the like, things have just gotten a good deal more chaotic and more violent. Like, a buddy of mine just got stabbed. He was, they were robbing somebody else, and him and his buddy were just walking across the street, down the street. And the leader of the little trio was like, go get those guys. And the other two went off and stabbed him repeatedly. And it seems to me like I used to go to New Orleans a lot. I can't claim intimate knowledge of the place other than I just used to go there a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But it seemed to me that there were more boundaries. Like there were places you could go and you really didn't have to worry about it that much.
You
could unless
walk
you're wandering
around
by yourself in the you know, early morning hours. Yeah, you might get jacked up, but in general, and you know, parts of the Mirny were safer, like all that stuff. And then and it just seems like, and I'd be interested to see, I'll almost guarantee you somebody's done a study on this, like the psychological wounds of Katrina on the people of New Orleans, and the idea that now somebody having gone through that is like a 12 or 13 year old. Mm-hmm. And now they're what age? You know, they're in their upper teens.
Yeah.
Access to whatever kind of weapon they need.
Oh, yeah, that's 10 years ago now.
Yeah.
So.
And like, are you going to really now, if you're that person, do you still have the same like moral boundary left that, okay, I need this guy's money and I want his iPhone, but I don't want to kill somebody? Like, is that still there? Or is like, I think after going through, and I've always said that I think New Orleans is owed an enormous apology by the entire damn country, because they were talked about as if they were cannibalizing themselves when they were actually, there was amazing amounts of bravery, and the fact that 40,000 people were in both those buildings and that there were only 4 fatalities, and none of those were really, one might have been a violent death, I think.
Yeah, there was the really old guy, he died of natural causes. Even,
yeah,
you know.
But if you stuck 40,000 white people into those two buildings and kept them for a week without any idea of when help was going to come, and they managed to keep themselves together and not tear each other limb from limb, we would be calling it heroic. And no one's ever said that about that. They start off saying that everybody's looting and killing each other. Mm-hmm. Then when it turns out all that shit was, there was looting, of course, but property, screw you. It's not the same as lives. And when all the other stories about how the raping the babies and all this other stuff, and even Nagin like came out with some stuff about how awful mm-hmm. things were, when that stuff turned out to be hyperbole and that the people were just scared and making shit up, or a big game of telephone with the press, no one ever came back and apologized and said, you know what, New Orleans really wasn't doing this. You know, the cops were doing some heinous things, but no one's ever apologized for that. And I think if you went through that as a young person, or even as, you know, an older person, mm-hmm. and like, why would you give a damn about tourists?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why wouldn't you? Like, I won't kill somebody just because I don't want to kill people. But a tourist comes to your town and they're drunk off their ass and just tooling around when they didn't give two shits about you when you were underwater. Like, I would think the line between do I shoot this person or not has changed.
It has. There is no line anymore. Now it's just people. It's no longer that tourist area anymore. You know, it's not we welcome you with open arms into our French Quarter, have a good time. They're like, why are you here? You know, I've got a lot of friends that do live there, work there, and the number one thing that they hate about it is the tourism, you know. Yeah. And they feel like it kills the culture almost, it
feeds so strongly on it, and it always has.
Yes.
And
it's what keeps that city going. Yeah. You know,
what got me when you talk about New Orleans, when all that happened was when people would say, well, you know, they kind of asked for it. I heard people even say that. Or they said, yeah. They live in this little bowl, and, you know, they just needed to shut the city down and move it almost. Screw it was like stupid remarks.
There's only like 7 interesting places in the United States. Well, no, that's not true. But truly interesting, like truly historic, deep multicultural places, and you can't just start lopping them off.
Right.
You're right, and it's, here's a, you know, it's a major city in the country, but yet New Orleans, my God, it's one of those places that creatively is pulled so much from us. This country is from that town.
It's nearby, yeah. Nearby,
and we're so fortunate again to live in this part of the country. But New Orleans, that's, I mean, right there. You said you were born in New Orleans.
Yeah, I was born in New Orleans.
You were born for New Orleans.
Have you seen any of the the like Lower Ninth and the places that got flooded that they left?
I have not been back in that area since. I really have no desire to really, to be honest.
I'm sure
it'd
be spooky as hell, but apparently they left a lot of those houses and a lot of that stuff just overgrown. It's just jungle.
Yeah. It's even further out. What did we go over there for last time? I can't remember. I don't know what we went over there for, but we got turned around and, you know, you made that wrong turn. Mm. Now all of a sudden you're in the warehouse district. Mm. And when I was 18 and whatnot, I would park in the warehouse district and then walk to the quarter, you know, and it was cool, but it, you know, it wasn't cool, but it was okay. Yeah. And we ended up in that area and it was just like, God, what is going on here? I mean, there's like trees growing out of the buildings now and stuff. Yeah. And
still see X's.
No one lives there.
When a house was searched and they would exit and they'd say how many bodies, like those markings.
I went over there quite a bit after the whole flood and the storm and everything. And it was literally, you know, it's a war zone. I mean, with cars in the middle of the interstate and it was just, you know, it was horrible. Like Beirut, you know, but it was. Nothing wrong with Beirut. I'm sure people live in Beirut. you know, the pictures we hear, you know, we talk.
We're still thinking the 80s.
Beirut. Right, that sure Beirut. That Beirut.
Rebuilt a little bit.
It's showing my age. It's already been that long. Huh? But I've also, at the same time, New Orleans has done a remarkable job in getting things back to. There's things over there now that, I mean, that are just. I'm glad they cleaned up some of the things that they are not there. Some of the newer buildings and some of the stuff that's came in there. So it has done a lot. It's just taken a long time, but it's done wonders.
Well, one thing too, while we're on the whole Katrina and New Orleans flooding, is that the flooding happened after the storm,
right.
And I don't want to take anything away from that city at all, or what they did to rebuild it afterwards, but. I came back. I left for the storm. I had a 4-month-old son at the time, and I had to get out. I mean, they say Category 5. I lived a mile and a half away from the beach. I had to get out.
Yeah.
So we drove over to Florida and stayed there. As soon as the storm was gone, I jumped in the van, and I was hauling ass back here. My ex-wife, her mother was with me, and I took her to her home. And I lived in Gulfport, and she lived in Ansley, Mississippi, which is over in the Waveland area. Mm. And the destruction I saw over there was just so overwhelming. I mean, we're talking about small cities just erased, you know, houses were just gone. Her house actually was lifted 40 feet in the air from the flood water, spun like 90 degrees, and then set down on top of a magnolia tree. And
treehouse.
Like, what? Yeah, exactly.
Instant.
And it was just amazing. And then I get home, and for some reason, when I get home, there's no power. You remember, nobody had your cell phone didn't work. You couldn't call anybody. Yeah. Mine worked somehow. For some reason, mine still worked. And I had, like, the little Sidekick flip thing, so I had internet. And I was checking out stuff, and I remember when they started reporting the flooding starting to happen, and it was just like, why is this happening? Why did they let this happen? You know, and
Army
then,
Corps engineers.
Well, what I love, too, was I love conspiracy theories. I love and you know, they talked about they blew the levees, you know, and I was like, well, why would they do that?
To say, well, they've done it before.
Well, why wouldn't they do that at this point, you know?
They've done it before.
It's funding.
They did
it.
I can't remember the big flood, but it was they, you know, to save the richer parts, you blow the levees before it gets down there, and everything floods off into the field. People just lost their.
Do you think this part of the country we've had natural disasters, and obviously it's always dealt with, you know. Things that it has to do with, I mean, it goes all back to the Civil War, I guess, in this area. But you think that has had a big part, you got in feeding the creative juices of this area?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. I agree with you. I mean, I think
heartbreak and catastrophes are always going to be hand in hand with music. What's his name? Junior. No, not Junior. Oh, man, the piano guy, dude. Robert. We all know he's super famous. He's an actor, piano player in New Orleans.
Living?
Harry Connick Jr.
Harry Connick Jr., yeah. You know, he took a good portion of his own personal money and started the whole musicians neighborhood out there. You know, they brought in all the cottages and they gave people places to live, and they, you know, got instruments back in their hands, and you know, and that's a great deal of money that he helped, that he came out of pocket and helped raise, you know, because you think about it, guitars are expensive, saxophones are even more expensive, you know, and his whole deal was got to get the music going again because that's what the city lives off
some of. People still haven't come back. I think most of the Nevilles are still spread around.
But I mean, you know, you still got like your regulars, like your Trombone Shorty, you know. You can't get them out of there. Rebirth, you know, you'd have to drag those kind of guys.
Well, there were people was dying to get back there. I mean, it was, you know, like as soon as we can get back to this whatever destruction. But even here on, we're talking about the destruction here on the coast. We all know about that.
Right.
But people, they come back. You said, well, I remember one time saying, everyone was about that type of storm. I said, I just won't ever come. I'll leave and won't come back. Well, I stayed in here. I'm still here. So it's something about this part of the world.
I had a plan. My initial, before I moved here, I thought I was going to be moving to New Orleans. And that was a large part of my planning, was to find a container, like some sort of chest, some sort of plastic or steel chest that I could put all my really important instruments and recording stuff. That's it. You know, like nothing else. I don't need like a TV, nothing. Just put all that stuff in something that's sealable, plastic it over, clamp it down, and just like bolt it to the floor.
Yeah.
And then at that point, I wouldn't be worried about anything. Like if I don't lose any, honestly, even those things, I'm not, I wouldn't like to lose them, but
if you could prevent it,
hard drive, you know, I would, if that was the case, I would just yank out my hard drive with all the drives that I have that have anything I've ever recorded or I've recorded for other people, just take off with those, put them in a backpack, wrap it in plastic and just go.
Yeah. I tell you, it was, probably close to a month after everything had subsided over there and businesses were getting opened up. A buddy of mine calls me up and he goes, man, we went down to the French Quarter last night. I was like, how'd that go? And he was like, it sucks. He's like, there's nothing down there yet. There's a few places open, but him and his wife went looking for this little jazz bar that I don't even know where it's at, but it's this little hole in the wall. Maybe 15, 20 people can fit in there, and the fire marshal's going to get called. But they wanted to see if it had survived, and they found it was open. So they were like, cool, okay. So they went in, and there was a guy playing piano, and it was just straight, you know.
I think I know the place.
Playing piano.
One of those long, skinny ones where the bar takes up like half of it, and then you walk down the...
That sounds like... I don't know the name of it. But they walked in, and they're serving drinks. Guy's playing jazz on the piano, and all instrumental. And his wife looks at him and goes, you see the guy sitting over there by the door? He's like, yeah, what about him? He goes, kind of looks like Stevie Wonder, don't he? Was like, whatever, okay, whatever. The guy gets done with like a 2-hour set and says, I'm going to take a little break, and I got a special friend coming up here to play you a few tunes. And I shit you not, he says, this 8-foot, 300-pound black man walks over to the guy that his wife just said looked like Stevie Wonder, put his hand on his shoulder. This man stood up. It was freaking Stevie Wonder. And he got up there and did 3 hours of jazz standards by himself.
Wow. Oh, God.
He just stepped into the bar because that was one of his favorite places to visit when he goes to New Orleans. And, you know, unannounced, he was just like, hey, think I can sit in? Who's going to tell Stevie Wonder no? You know, so he goes and does 3 hours, you know. And
so your friends were there that
got to see that, you know.
Wow, that's a good story.
Amazing. You know?
Like when you start talking about, like, you know, yes, New Orleans is under the underwater level or water sea level.
Yeah.
But large parts of the earth, you know, there's places in Europe, you know, the Dutch places and things. It's doable to live in those places. Like the amount of engineering that's required is not like so astronomical. Well, part of it's like Louisiana's poor, which and you know, Louisiana and Mississippi always switching, you know, 50th state on every list. But you can engineer that. Like the levees that broke or that were overtopped were engineered badly. They were set up wrong. They like if you got the right people involved, you could make that place safe.
Well, it, of course, yeah.
You said the Dutch, right? They're like, I think they're like the Levian dam experts of the world. Yeah, they actually offered to come in and provide the plans to rebuild the whole thing, and New Orleans straight up told them no. Well, they offered this free of service, and New Orleans, the city, was like, no, we didn't, that's cool. We got it. We got it.
Because then they would have to build it. They would have to get the money, and they'd have to build it and everything else. And it's more important, you know, to keep the oil industries happy. And, you know,
right.
Like, that's a trip. Like, I don't know how much you've been in my head, like my map in my head stops at New Orleans. Like, there's nothing south of New Orleans in my head until I started working on the oil rig. Mm-hmm. And then that's some amazing places. Once you zip past New Orleans heading south, you get into like legit swamps and the canals, and it's the most amazing air because there's so much greenery.
Right.
It's some of the best air I've ever been around. And then at a certain point on the roads, you know, heading down to Houma and these other places, the canals are like level with you on the road. Mm-hmm. And that's one of my favorite things in the world is to be driving along and you look over and you see a shrimp boat. It looks like it's driving along next to you.
Right. It's amazing how far, if you take a cruise out from New Orleans or something and you take the river, you're in that river as much on there as you're in the Gulf, it seems like. You go, you go so fast.
There's a lot of area below Louisiana, there. Louisiana, south.
When I was really little, I used to spend the summers down in south Louisiana on this side of New Orleans. And my uncle was a shrimper. He was also a welder. He worked during the day, so he shrimped at night. And but we lived, you know, my aunt lived right there on the bayou, and I'd spend the whole summer there. And I could tell you that we spent maybe 10% of the time on the roads. Anytime we wanted to go somewhere or do anything, you jumped in the boat and went down the bayou. You know, if you wanted to go to the store and get candy or something like that, you didn't ride your bicycle. You didn't walk.
Like Waterworld.
Got in the
minus Kevin Costner.
Yeah, exactly. And drinking your own pee.
Not as much suck. That was right. I also love in that movie. Somebody pointed out like a paper. Paper was apparently like a rare thing, but the guy's smoking cigarettes the whole time. So.
We're speaking of movies. Robert Redford, have y'all seen the movie he was in?
All is Lost.
Yes, that was a pretty interesting movie.
Well, the story is amazing. I have a weird problem with it, and it completely. I'm in the minority because I've heard great things about the movie, but the scenes in storms and a lot of the stuff on the boat was pretty obviously done on a soundstage, you know, or in some sort of pool, and the, you know, the background being filled in, however. But and to me, that stuff looked so rinky-dink for such an amazing, like, that's a huge movie, and it's about, you know, this life or death struggle. I love the fact no dialogue, no nothing, you know, and it's just this guy against the but. That's an opportunity because there's no dialogue and there's, you know, so very little going on otherwise in the movie other than like the actions. That's an opportunity to be interesting visually that they didn't take. There are some pretty amazing things of looking at the boat or the later on the raft. I'm not spoiling anything, but from underneath and watching some of the things float by, and it kind of lets you know, they use that to kind of let you know where he might be drifting and things like this. But like the actual storms and things like that, like even some of the times when he'll hear a storm coming up and he'll turn around and look at it, it's sort of weirdly framed out of it. And I think there might have been a decision to try to make it as plain spoken as possible. Like this is almost a documentary, you know, recreation of this guy because he has to do a lot of just mundane stuff. You know, he has to patch the boat. He has to do this. He has to find like these are all. It's not necessarily hugely dramatic things until, like, but you know something's at stake. So, but I think that movie, like, visually, when it got into those things, these tight shots of the boat and him wandering around on the boat, I was like, that's a soundstage and I can tell. Like, I can see it. I don't know how you get around that other than maybe spending more on CGI or something, but I just, like, come on, man. I don't know. But people liked it. It was nominated, at least.
Well, you know, but you think back when you were younger and you saw a movie like that, you didn't think about that then.
No, I think
we're kind of gotten spoiled a little bit with the green screen and a lot of movies, you know. Because
a lot of old... There are interesting things that can be done soundstage-wise, too. Do you know the movie Night of the Hunter?
Yes.
Amazing. You know, and this is some stuff that's obviously faked up a little bit. Like, there's no way that there's a car really in the river with the body in it.
Right.
But that's visually incredible. Like, that whole movie visually is incredible. Like, Jesus, the silhouettes on the backdrops.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen it?
Mm-mm.
Holy crap. It's so good.
You know the director off your head?
It's a big one. And I'm stupid for not knowing it. But there's a... Completely, this is just for y'all's edification. There's a movie called Face in the Crowd with Andy Griffith.
Oh, it's one of the best things that Andy Griffith... You ever think, you know, I'm a big Andy Griffith fan, because I love, you know, the office of Mayberry. I'm a big fan of all that. But Face in the Crowd is literally...
Elijah Kazan.
He wasn't nominated for an Oscar for this movie. He should have been. I mean, it was just an incredible performance.
He sings in it. He sings all the time. Sings all these blues songs.
Which
and
movie
all this
is
crazy
this?
Stuff.
A Face in the Crowd.
It's called Face in the Crowd by Elijah Kazan or whatever. And Elijah Kazan. And he was blacklisted.
Yeah,
because he named...
It was Russian, communist.
Yeah, he like, among all the Hollywood people, he actually ratted somebody out. So for the rest of his life, he couldn't get anything done.
Well, when they did something a few years ago, the Oscars, before he died, there were some people just politely collapsed. You know, others sit on there.
But
this old man comes out here and does it, but he made many great movies.
But that movie is... beautiful, and it's crazily apropos now, because he starts out as this, you know, he's just a fast-talking, slick, hick singer guy that becomes sort of famous for doing, like, advertisements and things like this, mm-hmm. and then starts attracting the attention of politicians that want him to endorse them or not endorse them. And so he's, you know, he's this homegrown hobo guy and whatever, and they love getting his endorsements, and, like, people listen to him, and then he has a radio show, and it gets bigger and bigger. But the idea of it plays with the idea of people playing on people's sympathies as, I'm one of you, you know, I'm just one of y'all, whatever, but really using them for their own game, which I think is a large part of the playbook of what rich people in this country do now, is like, they don't like God like I like God and like you like God, you know. Like, we need it. They're against us. What they really want, your vote, your help keeping their money. And so the Face in the Crowd, I think that versus the modern day establishment politically makes perfect sense. So go see
It's definitely a movie where a guy who achieves greatness from humble beginnings and the complete undoing. It's one of a kind movie.
You were asking, Night of the Hunter, the directors were Terry Sanders, Robert Mitchum,
Robert Mitchum was in it.
Yeah, he was.
Who's the director?
Okay. Well, the first name under directors was Terry Sanders, but Metacritic gave it a 99%.
Oh, it's one of the classics.
Genius.
So let me see.
Really? It had more than one director?
I don't know. That might be a fluke here. Let me see. Directed by Charles Laughton.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very cool. Have you guys seen the documentary? This is a good segue for both music and movies. But it's Searching for Sugar Man.
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever catch it?
The guy just died. The guy who filmed
Did
that.
He?
The filmmaker. Oh, yeah, he won the Oscar. Yeah, he died, I think, this past year. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I just saw it recently.
Check that to see. I might be giving some. But I believe he did die. He won the Oscar for that, for the documentary, a year ago.
That would be Malik Bendigello or something like that is his name.
You probably just nailed it.
That was perfectly pronounced. It is a good movie, though. It's
died the 13th of May, 2014.
Yeah.
Age 36. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Well, let's just say, I mean, since y'all have seen it, that, you know, for people who haven't seen it, it's definitely something worth checking out. Basically about this guy, Sixto Rodriguez, who was basically a nobody playing out of, was it Jersey, Boston,
Detroit?
And, you know, just kind of doing open mics, very weird kind of character, would play with his back to the crowd and all this kind of stuff. And just, you know, everyone thought he was like a drifter or homeless or something like that. Somehow or another, his album, one of his, I think he made two albums, and they made it over to South Africa where people picked it up, and he became like a national hero, like bigger than Dylan or like Elvis and all this kind of stuff. And years went by, and there was no information about him. You know, he'd like credit his songs to Jesus and
different people, yeah,
and different people and all this kind of stuff. And his lyrics didn't give a whole lot of input inside of where he resided and all this kind of stuff. And then all these weird stories about of him dying started submerging and surfacing. Emerging and all this and what have you. And this guy, I don't know how many years later it was. I mean, I want to say it was like decades later that somebody started actively, a music writer started looking and ended up finding him and sitting down with him. And, you know, now he's this kind of older guy and all this kind of stuff. And just very humbled and almost like not believing that he's this huge icon over in South Africa. Meanwhile, nobody in America still knows about him. And his music's actually...
Nowadays.
But
someone I really like is opening for him, this girl named Jenny O from LA. She's been opening for him. And he's... Nowadays, he'll fill places up. Because of that movie.
Yeah. Like, yeah, it's so crazy. He goes over to South Africa and sells stadiums. Mm-hmm. And first 10 minutes of the show, he can't even play because people are just screaming and yelling and all this kind of stuff. And he's just the most soft-spoken,
I hate it,
dude,
when that happens to me.
It's terrible.
I know. Terrible.
Y'all have those kind of moments at Ben Kaupin's. I've noticed that.
Yeah, they're usually like, stop.
Yeah. Where's the end of the song?
A couple weeks ago, talking about Ben Kaupin's, I always call it Ben Kaupin's Irish Coast Pub. I don't know, because when I travel a lot, there's a lot of Irish pubs and stuff. So for some reason, whenever I speak about it, it's always Ben Kaupin's Irish Coast Pub. Even when I Facebook it, I think I do that. I guess a shout out always to Ben Kaupin. I guess he can, you know, but
it's a great man.
We talked about him last time. You know, being a lovely man, you said. What was the quest that you said about Ben?
I don't know. There was something about him being devilishly handsome by his beard. I kind of took offense to that a little bit myself.
I shaved my beard.
Are we
going to
have a
then.
Beard off? Is that what this is?
It may come down to that. Actually, I was getting my hair cut last weekend, and my friend works for Chuck Kelly, and I was in there, and one of the other stylists, she looks at me a couple of times, and she goes, I want to do a beard competition. You're going to have to work on that. And she was like, no. I want to get a bunch of guys that have beards, and we're going to do them up all crazy, and we need a place to do it. And I really love this place called the Irish Coast Pub on 49. Have you ever heard of it? I was like, oh, okay, here we go. So she's planning like a beard event soon. She's going to talk to Ben about it.
It's time to grow one back.
I bet somebody could be really really successful, but if somebody opened up a museum with famous people's beards, you know, like generals, old generals, and any actors, and all this kind of stuff.
I always had, at one point, I grow beards and goatees and whatever all the time. Right now, I just have a mustache. Oh, it's very 70s. But one time, my wife, I had one, just a huge beard, and so I cut the middle part out here, and it looked kind of like that Grover Cleveland look. Yes. She came in, and it was a big thing, and it was like, you're not going out like that. And I kind of like it like this, you know? But obviously, I didn't go out like that. But I was going to ask you about the Irish Coast Pub with the open mic nights. Can I address that?
Yeah.
You know, we talked about a little bit, I don't know if last time we had this, or maybe it's in Crossing, or maybe we just talked about it somewhere else. We did go to the Waffle House after that. The conversation just continued. It just never could shut me up. No, but the question was, actually, Watson has the Chimneys down here. Mm-hmm. He's a huge music fan. Everybody knows him, just loves Watson. But he was talking about, you know, with open mic nights, and it's really caught on so good. It's amazing how it has progressed. And But it was talking about I was with you last week. We were talking about the possibility, you know, of highlighting a little more of the original music people. You know, he brought up about something about, you know, he always thinks of our open mic or nights is where people try their new song out, either crashes or it burns or whatever.
Right, right.
And I told him, I said, well, right now, you know, it's fired up. So many people are showing up and doing this music. As it builds, if it catches that to that level, that would be a great thing.
Well, when we originally started it, when Ben and I sat down, and well, when he brought the idea to me and wanted me to host it because he knew that I would show up because he's my buddy, and mm-hmm. whatever Ben asks, I'll do because he'll do the same for me.
Right.
It was not open jam night. It was not the Monday open jam night. It wasn't an open mic. It was never intended for it to be what it is now. Not downing what it is now,
no.
But it was Monday singer songwriter night,
mm-hmm.
and we wanted to hear originals. And it was a way for Ben to kind of kick me in the butt to get to writing again too. At the same time, his challenge to me was bring a new song every week,
mm-hmm.
and it just was such a hard thing to get into people's head that we were looking for original music. And we had talked about it being okay to do covers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still okay to do covers. But it's got to be something that nobody's ever heard before. Like when Eddie comes up and he jams, we're going to get into Eddie for a second here because he's like one of my new favorite people in the world all of a sudden.
EddieDixonMusic.com.
I started out and I've got a few originals that I do, but I can sit there and play covers for the most part to the general
mm-hmm.
public, and they have no idea that I'm doing covers.
Right.
And that was one of my main points when I started what I do now. And everybody shows up. Everybody that I knew that was singer songwriter, try to get them to come out. They won't come out. You know, well, they're too busy. I got to work. I got this, mm-hmm. the kids, the wife. And it's all understandable. But then it started evolving into people showing up and playing covers. And it's like, okay, well, me and Ben just kind of look at each other and it's like, well, we got to roll with the punches because we're looking for this to evolve into something, mm-hmm. you know. And
right. The
egg hatched. The baby crawled out, and it's still in diapers, but it's learning how to walk at this point, and it's evolved into what it is now. And it's a really good thing because for the most part, everyone that is coming and participating is bringing something unique and not cookie cutter to the table.
I've never, like, a large part. I mean, I've since my last bands I would put together a band when I finished an album, but I hardly ever had. Other than my first band, I hardly ever had one that stuck around for a length of time. But so I end up at open mics a lot,
right.
And I've never been to one that the weird mixture of, like you said, like I'll go up, and, you know, kick all everybody's buddies off stage, and do like four songs of original or weird covers or some stuff like that. And ukulele girl, who I don't know her name,
Alex Moe,
great, powerful. Bear of a voice.
She used to be in Roscoe Isaacs.
Yeah,
actually,
she was.
Too.
Oh, really?
She was the fiddle player.
The original went to Europe.
She plays fiddle.
Yeah.
Right.
She. Okay. I don't know if she still has it. I hope she still does. But yeah. Played Charlie Daniels fiddle.
But she's amazing. She usually plays earlier and things like that. So there's still like a peppering of those people coming up and doing that. And then the option, somebody comes up and does songs with some of the band. And then somebody comes up and does songs and it's everybody.
Yeah.
You're the ringleader, so that's you're always dragging the band along with you. But but like I've never seen an open mic that was set up that way.
Yeah.
Not even once. It's usually is either a singer songwriter thing.
Yeah.
Or everybody goes up.
You sign a list,
it's
and then
really,
we decide who's going
to
come
up. You know, like I say, I've been to lots like you have, and it's something very unique. I was telling Watson the other night, I said, we were talking, and I understood what he was saying. He said, I was not trying to be, you know, a certain way about it,
right.
You know, because some people, you know, covers, you know, but I think covers are very much a bigger part of the music scene as originals.
It always
has been, and it should be. But I, like I was telling him, I said, that's just going to take time. But the enthusiasm, and not just one type of people. We're talking about different ages.
Yes.
We're talking about different, obviously different backgrounds and walks of life. There are certain ones that normally you probably wouldn't know that much and talk to and even knew they even could play an instrument or sing. And they're doing this. And so I remember going back, you know, I've been going to Ben's for a long time with a, well, you know, I'd show up there and sometimes it'd be, if Jason was in town and, or, you know, he'd up there and he would perform a song or two. Mm-hmm. And it was nice when he would show up, but there just wasn't a lot of, and I would tell people, oh, go over here. And it would be like, me and Robbie went one night and it was just kind of one of those slow nights.
Yeah.
So I've been telling him, man, you got to go over there now. Because it's so much different. It's just evolved. The sound's better, too.
Yes, yes.
The sound at Ben's has improved.
And we're still greatly. Working on that.
But it's improved. It's really yeah. improved. And I guess Jason had a great deal.
Yeah, Jason came in. They spent a whole Sunday in there actually trying to tune the whole room. And the whole thing is, and Will talked about this on the last one, mm-hmm. that room is a great room for a bar. It is a terrible room for a music venue because of that big, god-awful window mm-hmm. that brings everybody into the bar. You know, mm-hmm. it's such a double-edged sword right there. But it's just so hard to tune that room. It is just so hard. I go in Johnny Hosey. Mm-hmm. I run sound for him on Thursdays up there, and it's usually just him and the guitar. So you think, okay.
Is he doing it every Thursday now?
Every Thursday, yeah.
I was wondering about
and,
that.
Cool. You know, for a sound at Irish Coast Pub.
And on Thursdays?
Yeah, every Thursday, 6 to 9, something like that. And, you know, but as a sound man, you're like, one microphone, one guitar, cake job. No. The one thing that makes it easy is he plays a Martin. So guitar set, get the gain set, EQ, no problem. Running his monitors, I give them so hot for him to hear himself and the backlash off that window coming oh, yeah. back through the bar. I barely have any mains going on at all, you know. Yeah. It's really hard to tune that room and get it perfect. But once you find that little sweet spot and everybody's happy and, you know, you don't have people sitting there looking like the guy from the old tape commercial with their yeah. hair blaring back, you know, yeah.
What Jax does over, what Mark does, Garrison does at Jax by the Tracks, I've never really paid this much. He has a big window behind the mm-hmm. stage, too. Obviously, during the early hours, people see it and they're coming in. But as the night becomes night, curtains cover it over.
Yeah, we've talked
and
about
I believe that,
that
helped because all these musicians, me not being a musician up there playing, I haven't really paid it much mind. And I was recently, I've been saying, they've always shut this curtain. Well, now I understand why.
Yeah. Because there might be a way to selectively also baffle back there, like with some materials.
Well, you notice we got the soundboard, that little makeshift soundboard that's sitting at the bottom of the stage yeah, now. Yeah. But I mean,
does he need some new, is he, I know he's got a lot of decoration stuff up there, you know, it's really cool and all, but as there's an idea of maybe putting some soundboards up there would maybe help.
We've talked about doing that a little bit, and we were actually talking about now, well, Ben was talking about being on the lookout for a couple of more mains to offset mm-hmm. because here's the deal. A lot of people think that when I go watch up there mm-hmm. other bands perform or when I'm listening to someone else play at open mic or whatever, if you notice, I'm in the back mm-hmm. and that's where my name's on the bar. It's in the back of the bar. Well, there's a reason for that. It sounds best back there. I want to yeah. hear what's going on. When you get close to the front, you're it's listening to monitors and you yeah. lose a lot of vocal and this and that. And, so I go to the back, especially when that's I run sound, you know, yeah. I like to hear what it really sounds like, and then I come up to the front, you know, and it's like, sorry, guys, I know it's hard for you, just kind of bear with it. You sound great back here, though. Everybody's having a great mm-hmm. time, you know, but when you're on the stage, it's a battle, you know, to hear yourself, and voices travel in that bar. I know you've yeah. had to notice it, you know, you get up there by yourself with your guitar, and you start yeah. singing, and you're like... You had chicken parm for lunch? That's great. Okay, next verse, same as the first.
I've long since gotten where that stuff. I don't even hear it. There's the occasional, like the. I definitely notice if I'm in an audience. If I'm playing, I don't care.
Right.
But in an audience, I saw my buddy Algebra play, and we actually, like, two different groups of people turned around and said, "Hey, your conversation is great. But do you think, you know," and they just completely clueless, some really rich people sitting in the...
It is so irritating when you're it's seeing somebody that you know, it's like we talked about this again last time. It was like when we were at Jax or Callahan's, and it's like I brought up Anthony Crawford from Sugarcane Jane. This guy has played with Neil Young. He's toured with them. He's been on stage with Springsteen. He's been Steve Winwood, Dwight Yoakam, all these people, Sonny James, and he's written all this stuff. And most people walk in and see this guy, and they think, oh, he's good, you know, and then he'll go back to eating and talking and whatever. Mm. And I'm like, God, people.
You just want to shake them and
do you realize what an honor and a privilege it is to have somebody like playing in a small venue? Because next week he's not going to be paying that little
stuff. I've got a slightly different, and I'm definitely somebody that has a dog in the fight.
Right.
But I've got a slightly different take on it. The whole idea of music recorded and live, the idea of the value of it has been so in flux recently. Like the idea that hardly anybody pays for anything,
right?
You know, and I still buy a lot of music. I buy it electronically, but I buy as much as I can. But especially people trying to get heard, you're definitely like you're giving things to people for free, mm-hmm. and there are so many other things happening. And all this is good. I'm a consumer too, so mm-hmm. I love this. Mm-hmm. You're competing with Netflix. You're competing with actually good TV. Like this is the golden age of actually good TV shows. Like not necessarily on the networks, but
right.
HBO and things like this. Breaking like people are making TV that rivals some of the best movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and all this other stuff. So you're asking people, you know, you're in the middle of all that, in that situation, like. I want them to come out and talk to their friends. I don't mind that. Like mm-hmm. the music's there, and if they're willing to give a little bit in attention, usually there will be a lull,
right?
And somebody will turn it. It's also part of the performer's challenge, is you know, draw them in somehow.
Yeah.
Draw them in somehow. And sometimes, and this is you'll notice, like I try to get super soft. Mm-hmm. Like you get up there and get down to one string and you just bring it down. And usually people will swivel.
Yeah.
And there'll be a little bit more of a like
it's like Pavlov's dog kind of thing.
Well, it's just like, wait, no, what's happening now? Whereas if you're just raging the whole time, it's
it
different.
Always don't have to be loud. You
yeah.
know, because
and matter of fact, the some of the most effective stuff I've seen, there's a girl named Eleni Mandel from LA, great, probably one of my favorite singer songwriters, period. And in her shows, that's a large part of it, is like she'll buy some time with kind of a rocker, mm-hmm. and then she'll do this like absolutely bumping along the bottom volume wise, and people lose their mind. You tunnel in because it's different. It's you know this and that, and right now we're deciding as people that create stuff how we're going to even to relate to the people that consume it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's with all the stuff, with movies, right. with anything else. And mm-hmm. what I don't want to do now, like if they're coming out, if part of the reason they're coming out is so they can chat mm-hmm. with their buddy about their chicken parm, I don't like chicken parm, sorry. It's just greasy.
Chicken parm, man. It's great.
I don't like the idea of putting cheese on. Well, chicken's hard anyway. It's either greasy or it's dry. But I want them to come out, mm-hmm. and I want them to do that. That's part of the whole experience. I don't mind that they're not like zoning in. There will be people that do,
mm-hmm.
you know, and there's certain rooms that you go to that are way more music oriented. Mm-hmm. In Chicago, there was a place that opened up called the Whistler, which mm-hmm. was amazing. Little tiny place. Great. Like they had like a legit mixologist and so they had these amazing cocktails and stuff like that. And even though I played there several times, even though, like, in general, it was from a cooler, hipper sort of mm-hmm. Artist that they would get in there. I was definitely a little bit countrified for what they do.
Mm-hmm.
But even though it was regulars, and these were people that didn't know me from Adam, there was the room had been created and fostered as a music listening room.
Right.
So those places, I think you can still go. You can find places to go and see a band and completely tune in. Like there are those places, you know, Largo's in LA, I believe they'll actually slit your throat if you say anything. They'll just pull up, you know, pull your tongue out your nose. There are those places, but most of the places we're going to play down here don't have that option.
It's a fellowship. People are there to gather and talk about the week, and Irish Coast is that place.
Where it works here locally, I mentioned it earlier and I said, look it up. I'm going to bring it up. Is the Frog Pond at Blue Moon Farm over in Silver Hill, Alabama.
Yeah.
And to give you a little brief what it is, It is actually on an actual form. A woman by the name of Kathy Steele, who is her place, and her and a different group of people, they've got this together. And it's they put a stage, it's an outdoor stage with state of the art sound, everything, lighting, but it's made out to look like an old front porch.
Oh, wow.
You have three-legged dog that's, while the bands are playing, is walking across the stage. It's just that kind of environment. You got the horses and all, and the, you know, and animals and everything around the place. But what is it is a Sunday afternoon social, and what people do, they're invited to go. You got to request an invitation. Say, I want to go to hear these group of musicians. It'd be right. Like six musicians from different walks performing together, taking their turn, jamming together. And I'm talking about people who are seasoned musicians who play with the best. And they so basically they have this out in front of this. Where people bring their food, and they actually bring them, like, you know, intermission, and go have their lunch or dinner or whatever. But everybody in front of the stage, the 250 or so people, are in their lawn chairs, and it's before the thing. It is a listening room environment. Anybody wants to talk, they get up. And they have areas where they can go talk.
They
really stress it. And, of course, it's an opened-up area, but people can go back or have a smoke or whatever, you know, in the back. But they have – and people are there. If there's bickering, somebody goes taps. You know, hey, this is a listening room. But, yeah, you friends, you know, you can talk back here. Nobody's insulted by it because everybody there is there to hear the music. And how you get it is you request an invitation. You say, I want to get this show at this summer Sunday. And me and my friend, and you put your name in, and so when you show up, you pay the amount of money, and the money goes to the musicians. The money goes to the musicians. Any kind of donations there goes to keep the place up.
Right.
But it's the best deal in town. But the thing is, it's they've captured that in such a way that very special that we can live this close to go to that. And and if anybody ever wants to go here with you at this table, want to go, let me know, because if you haven't seen it, it's just go see it. It's something really worth going.
I'm intrigued by the name alone.
It's like I said, it's the Frog Pond in Blue Moon Form. Check up the website. It has a schedule every Sunday, and it starts in the fall and comes through the spring, the season. And when it gets real hot, they don't have it.
Right.
But I applaud everything they've done with this thing. There's been a band that's formed there. It was several group of musicians. They formed Willie Sugar Caps. It's a super kind of a local super group. They've actually won. We talked about them last time. They got a lot of recognition. And there's been a magazine out of Alabama that was started over there. So it's really become, it's got roots. It's really taken off. A lot of musicians from New Orleans, Muscle Shoals, Nashville. I went and saw Steve Forbert there. You know, Steve Forbert's great, great artist. In fact, Anthony's played with him before, and I think he's coming back. I hope so. But it's when you're not there, you think, oh, my God, what's going on this Sunday afternoon? Because it's Sunday. What's going on Sunday afternoon over there? Because it's obviously great music. And I wish I could make all more, but I can't. But it's but it has that. It has that environment.
It's respected. And you know, well, I think the other thing that's going on nowadays, and I'm not quite sure how to tap into this, but I think it helps if you've already got somewhat of a following. But we talked about it a little bit last time, is that it seems like so many artists are going to are bypassing clubs altogether and doing these house shows up and down the coast, you know, up and down whatever their route is, you know, just asking for hosts, the host it. And there's a situation that, like, I'm sure if someone's talking loud, you know, they'll get sandbagged and thrown out the back or something.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. So I think the bar, the like multi-use facility that is the bar, I think as musicians, I have to, like, if the drinks brought them out there, that's fine. You know, if their friend and their drink brought them out there, that's fine. It's my job. You know, they have no choice but hear me.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So it's my job, if I really want them to tune in, to make them tune in.
Right.
Or if not, it wasn't meant to be.
Anthony, one time, you know, a lot of time I'll see all the same people at some of these venues, especially here on the coast, and I'll be hearing this band or whatever, and I look around, and there's this group up front that's just getting into it. They're always there.
Yeah.
One time he came up to me and said, hey, we really thank you guys for coming up here. And I'm thinking, it was kind of noisy here tonight, but as a musician, they know they were reaching. And of course, everybody there, even though they didn't listen, they went and bought the CDs and they did this. And then people like us that keep going back and going and see it again and telling other people about it. Yeah. So I guess I can see what you're talking about.
And we don't have, like, at this point, you don't have a revenue stream as far as, like, it's hard to sell. Like, the only way you're going to sell things is selling them to people.
Yeah.
Like, there's not the, admittedly, you can get it online and have it available everywhere. Mm-hmm. But until you, I think that the only place left that you can really touch people enough that they become a fan or don't become a fan is right there in front of them.
Right there, yeah. I've got a friend, Crystal Bright. She's up in North Carolina, South Carolina. Mm-hmm. She'll kill me. Asheville. That's north, Asheville. Right?
Yeah,
yeah, okay. She's out in that area.
I think Asheville doesn't count as Carolina. It's too damn liberal. Yeah. It's Asheville.
It's a music town.
But it's Crystal Bright and the Silver Hands is her band. And she plays piano. She plays the accordion. She plays these crazy African stringed instruments. She plays drum, everything. I mean, she just...
Kora?
Everything.
Like the harp?
The little...
It's got two sets of strings come out like in a V.
She's got a lot of stuff.
She plays in the Asheville area. She's pretty much...
tours constantly.
She's all over the road.
She passes through every once in a while. But she came up with a great idea the last time she came and played down at Ben Kaufman's Irish Coast Pub. She had her little merch table out there, and she had all the CDs and her stickers and her just everything. And I saw these little crystal pieces, and it had CB inscribed inside of it, you know, like the little monogram pieces you see in stores and stuff, you know, just little cheap trinkets. Yeah. And I was like, what's going on here? And
USB
she's like,
USB sticks.
That's exactly what it was. Yeah, she popped the cap off. It was a USB stick. You stick it in there. The red light comes on and brightens up the CB on it.
That's awesome.
And it's all of her albums, a ton of pictures, a ton of professional live videos, and biography, band, her, this, that, you know, everything on there. And when you buy the USB, it's cheaper than buying all the albums and a sticker, you know, and you get it all right there.
How much was she selling that for?
I believe she was selling those for like $12.
Oh my God.
And it was like four albums on there, plus the videos, plus the song lyrics, plus this, plus anything she could think of to throw on there.
I'm always back and forth. You know, I've got a bunch of albums sitting around, and I love them. My children, I love them.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But I'm always wary of that. Like, I know that I could give, like, all my stuff's available online for free. You know, nobody has to pay anything, but I know that if I try to get people, go get them all, like that, it's just so much to take in, especially somebody you don't know.
Right.
But that actually sounds weirdly,
that's a really good idea.
Weirdly encapsulated in a way that, you know, you put them on there, they go in your iTunes, you can get at them at your leisure.
You're right.
You know, but I still think, like, with, I'm super bad when I was touring. I would try to hand people two or three of my albums, and I think that's kind of a stupid
idea. It gets to be overwhelming.
Yeah,
you know,
it's like, well, where do I start? What's the deal?
Which one do you like best? And then you don't end up listening to the other two.
Yeah. So I think I'm going to try to force myself.
Did listen to all of yours that you handed them to me.
Oh, I gave you three, didn't I? See, that's exactly what I'm talking
jealous.
About.
I didn't get any.
I'm bringing CDs to the next Monday. I finally found them. I lost them all. I lost every CD that I printed. I got so fed up when I was promoting my stuff, that I was like, well, I'm just not going to bother with this for a while. So the box got wrapped up and shoved somewhere. And then I spent 2 weeks looking for it. I couldn't find it. It was like at the highest point. I have a filing cabinet. My room is nuts because it's all musical equipment. There's no bed. There's no nothing. And on top of a filing cabinet that's on top of a shelf, I had stuck it up there and wedged it back and just couldn't see it.
I was so
completely fed up. Like, I sent out easily 400 emails twice,
right,
with my last album, trying to get, and got like 2 bites. And at that point, I was like, okay, bleh, you know.
This has been an ongoing conversation I've been having with a few friends of mine here lately. Playing like I play and what I play, most of these places, they're like, we're not really sure about that, you know. And in some places, they're like, oh, we love it, please come back, you know.
Yeah.
Julep Room, I'm there once a month, and I used to play there. I do all the Thursdays in a month at one point, and it's like, okay, this is a little too much for one place. You know, Ben has faith in me. He lets me do every Monday night. He'll give me solo gigs. Like I did for the Gulfport Mardi Gras Parade, I went up there and played and had a blast there. I mean, everybody was – I made more money in tips than I've made – and pay at the Julep Room sometimes, not knocking the Julep Room at all, but you know, it's it was great. And but I have all these other places, I'm not going to name any names, but that I know my circle of musician friends have been like, hey, talk to this guy, you want to get him in here, you know, and they're like, yeah, but he's really weird, you know, he plays a lot of songs I've never heard before, you know, and they're
it might also what. And we're going to, obviously I'll talk to you more about it when we, but like, we need to get you a recording done.
Yeah.
Like some sort of good recording that you can pass around and put that allows, it's a little bit easier for people to put a stamp on it when it's right. not just a secondhand description of, like, I saw him and he does all the, like you said, all these right, weird yeah. covers.
Well,
I know it. Walk Away. It's off the Dead Man Walking soundtrack. It's one of my favorites. I actually cover the other, the super slow song, Fall of Troy.
Oh, yeah.
That's a
yeah.
heartbreaking song. Do you know that?
Mm-hmm.
It's the same with men as with horses and dogs. Nothing wants to die. Holy shit. Come on. Are we close to coming up on time? You said you didn't want to go quite as long as the last one did, didn't you?
We're at 1:30, so...
What was the last one?
It was a marathon. The
last one was like two, yeah.
People watch, listen to it in segments, like three segments, yeah. you know.
Which is totally fine because it doesn't, I just realized it wasn't. Which is totally fine because it doesn't go anywhere. So if people want to listen to an entire conversation in one yeah. sitting, that's fine. Or they want to break it up. Or if they just want to listen to about an hour and they're like, oh, you know, I'll listen to another one or something like that. You know, it doesn't go anywhere.
Well, I think...
Go do a marathon and listen to it.
Hey, I listened to it. It was good.
It's good. I enjoyed it. I had notes. I had notes that of specific things that we were going to talk, that I want to talk about. And based off of the last one, it was like, I forgot I'm at home. Though.
Well, we discussed New Orleans, hurricanes, floods.
Can we touch on this? We didn't talk about this yet, but I'm going to segue into it by this story here. I used to live in Socia, and there was this little tobacco shop, and when I was still a heavy smoker, I would stop in all the time, and I noticed that by the register they had a new little thing with these things hanging on it, and it caught my attention, and I was, what is this? And it's like some kind of incense, and I was like, I like incense in the house, you know, make your house smell pretty good. And I picked it up and I sniffed it, and I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. So I threw it on the counter, got my pack of cigarettes, rode up to the house, and I'm lighting this incense, and it just won't stay lit. It's not burning. And you're real aggravated, so I tossed them on the side, and it was a couple of weeks later, some friends of mine come over, and they're like, dude, what's up with the spice sitting on the table here? And I was like, what are you talking about? And they're like, this bag of spice, pre-rolled spice you have. And I was like, that's incense. And they're like, no, you cannot be that gullible, dude. Are you telling me you really think that's incense? And I was like, it's incense. And they're like, no, you're supposed to smoke this. And I was like, no. They smoked it. I was like, I'm not smoking anything that says incense on it.
That's like the herbal...
It's supposed to be like the marijuana alternative, but...
Yeah.
And it's like this heart accelerant. Everybody that I see it, and they smoke it, and they get all excited, and they're like this. And I'm like, I thought you were supposed to want to get high and mellow out.
Yeah. The last podcast that
I have a problem the other way. I love
the last podcast.
So
I
need to not touch.
We
it,
talked probably. about the bath salts, and I was saying that like medically wise, like in a medical setting, like the worst things that I've ever seen were about. It's actually spice was actually what I was what I was referring to.
I got you.
Yeah, people lose.
Not that
their
you
gore.
Know. Either one of them is, you know,
prevalent.
Yeah, they're both
and the
pretty
subject always
terrible,
winds up so. On drugs and
sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
This will be. I've got stories. We can do it every time.
Well, I know we've all got engagements to get along to, mostly music or otherwise. Me, I'm exhausted, so I'm going to go sleep in my car.
In front of your house.
He gets his best rest there.
Thanks, guys, once again for joining the good times, good fun yes, times. So we'll definitely do it again.
Enjoyed it.
Thank you very much.
And thank everybody for listening. I hope this one was a little bit more bite-sized for you. So until next time, Monday nights, the Irish Coast Pub.
Ben it's Kaufman's the Irish Coastal Coast Noise Podcast.
And that is all.